Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 147. I'm your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host and nemesis, Pete Michaud.
Konnichiwa, Chris.
Howdy, Pete. How's it been? We took last week off. It's been a while. How are things?
Things are pretty good. You?
Things are going all right with me. I've been really intent on checking out the new updates on the Super Smash Bros. Website. Have you checked out this new song, this version of Gangplank Galleon with the rap in it?
No, I haven't. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of hilarious. And at first, completely unintelligible. If you listen really carefully, though, you can make out lyrics, and it's totally crazy. They sing about pie. It's awesome.
So it's not the DK rap in the background.
It is not the DK rap, but it might be way, way, way better.
I'm weirdly excited but disappointed at the same time.
But enough about that. There's plenty of other things going on in the world of Nintendo to talk about. We have new releases, we have news, and then we have this week's big topic, which is going to be video game vacations. Locations we would like to visit if we were able to transport ourselves to any video game world.
Mm-hmm.
However, before we get to that, let's kick things off by discussing some of the latest releases on Nintendo systems. Specifically, let's start with an adventure game that hit Switch not too long ago, and that is Okami from Capcom. Okami, of course, is an epic Zelda-style action-adventure with a unique Japanese art style. You play as a wolf, which was obviously more unique before Twilight Princess was announced when this game first came out. In this game, in addition to, you know, fighting with various weapons, you also learn these celestial brush powers that let you do things like slash enemies, turn day into night, restore broken objects, and most importantly, bring the world back to life. Now, unfortunately, I have not had a chance to pick this up on Switch yet, but Pete, you have picked it up, right?
I have.
Awesome. So I would love to know what you think. I really enjoyed this game when it was on PlayStation 2. I enjoyed it a bit less when it was on Wii for various reasons, but how is it on Switch?
I get a report. It's really good.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah, the port seems to be really solid. So I'm coming at this from somebody who's never really played Okami before. I know that I saw it or maybe attempted it, but didn't spend much time at all playing it before. I can definitely say I've played it more on Switch than I've played it on any other console.
Okay.
You know, I've only made it a short way into the game, but so far, it definitely has a lot of promise.
Now, you are past the intro, right? Because it is sort of legendary for having one of the longest, most drawn-out intros in gaming history. I mean, people complain about Zelda being slow to start, and, you know, this is a very Zelda-esque game, and boy, did it take sort of the wrong lesson in that department.
Yeah, man, I almost couldn't believe how long it is. Plus, there's, like, this text that you can't really skip, and...
Mm-hmm.
Man, yes, I made it past all of that. Yes, for
okay.
Sure.
All right, that's good.
As you mentioned, the intro is pretty long-winded. There is no voiceover, so it gets a little tedious at times. You get a lot of that wop 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 wop.
Yeah, they're kind of babbling like rare characters, sort of.
Yeah, and again, you can't really make the text happen any faster. You can skip. That is there. The option's there, but I recommend you don't, because you kind of want to know the story, and there's really no going back once you do that.
Mm-hmm. It is kind of important to know if you haven't played through that before. But still, despite that, you know, as I recall, it was still a real treat. Despite the slow starting nature, you know, it totally pays off once you get into the gameplay.
Yeah, it definitely does. You know, and I tried playing it in a variety of modes.
Cool.
Played it on my TV with the Pro Controller, which seemed like a great experience. And then once I kind of got into the meat and potatoes of the game, I tried going with the Joy-Con controlling it. And, it's funny. Originally, I was using the brush controls on the control stick. And that was fine, but I definitely...
Is that controlled with the right stick?
No, it's actually controlled with the left stick.
Okay.
You have to hold in a shoulder button and then draw on the screen with the left stick. You do get the option to flip-flop which shoulder button it is.
Okay.
One adjusts the camera, one adjusts the brush, and you can invert those if you'd like.
That's good.
But, you know, I thought I was all fine and dandy with the control stick, but... After using the Joy-Con for a bit, I actually realized that that was much easier to draw a lot of different things and pretty much with ease.
So that gives you basically pointer controls, right?
It does. And, unlike the Wii, it doesn't need to, like, have the reticle pointed anywhere. You just kind of aim it at the TV and gyrate your hand, as it were.
Okay, well, that's good, because that's one of the problems with the Wii game is that, in theory, it seems like, you know, aiming the Wii remote at the screen and drawing on there should have been amazing, but it was actually kind of flawed. So I'm really glad to hear that it has vastly improved when using the Joy-Con.
Yeah, I didn't think that the control stick controls were that bad.
No, they were fine on PS2.
Yeah, for the most part, they worked. But then as soon as I used the brush with my hand, it was like, oh, yeah, this is much easier. And honestly, it just kind of felt more natural.
Well, cool. I'm glad to hear it.
And that's not just, you know, me drinking the Kool-Aid or anything.
No, that makes sense to me. And did you also try it out in handheld mode with the touchscreen?
I did. And I'm happy to report the touchscreen works well as well.
Cool, as I would expect.
The only caveat I would suggest is that you play it where the opposite hand holds the shoulder button, because you need to hold that shoulder button while you're drawing on the screen.
Oh, yeah, that's very true. That's very true. That is an important thing to know.
So in advance, you should get used to holding it the whichever one. You know, if you think you might end up playing in a handheld mode, you don't really want to get used to the opposite control scheme.
Right, you want the button that you press with your non-dominant hand so you can be drawing on the screen or swinging around that Joy-Con. Yeah, it's a very good point. Yep. That must be why that option's in there.
Yeah, precisely. But yeah, as advertised, everything works great. It's a really fun mechanic. For anyone who hasn't played Okami before, just being able to kind of like stop whatever's going on the screen and just like draw on top of it is actually pretty fun and satisfying.
Yep, I recall that as well.
It, I think you mentioned this, there's puzzles you solve where there's nothing going on and you can just like, you know, draw the sun or like make a bridge form. That's cool and easy. But then there's also moments where you kind of have to stop mid gameplay and, you know, draw on the screen to take out enemies. I could imagine, I haven't got to a point where this really mattered, but I can imagine if you're in a boss fight or something, the touch screen being a little cumbersome just because you go from holding controllers to then kind of turning the system and using your hand. But I don't know if that would be that much of a drawback.
I don't know. I mean, Okamiden, the sequel that was on DS, you know, that was obviously only a handheld game, only had the touch screen, and it worked out pretty darn well. So I imagine it would be, you know, great in Okami, even if you're in a boss fight or no matter what you're doing. At least that's my prediction.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Anyway, I'm glad to hear you're enjoying it so far. I mean, if this is your first time through, you are definitely in for a treat. There are huge areas to explore, lots of variety of enemies to fight. You know, there are some epic boss battles that indeed do include the puzzle elements. And there's just, you know, tons to explore and collect, a variety of weapons. You have this whip-like weapon, you have a sword, and you have that sort of discus thing that you start with. All those have, you know, upgrades and various forms, and it's just a very rich, robust game. And, you know, I would love to go back and play through it again. And, you know, at only $20, I am very tempted to pick this up all over again on Switch.
Yeah, the price point is awesome. The game looks great. You know, I think it probably does look a little bit more dated than your average Switch game. However,
maybe, but I mean, it does have that really unique, you know, painterly watercolor Japanese ink art style. I think that makes it hold up way, way better than a lot of other games of its era.
Totally agree. I was going to compare it to maybe something more of like, you know, an indie game. And I think for $20, it does kind of have that. But imagine an indie game that's like got 40 hours of gameplay in it, or 20 hours at least.
It's a pretty massive game. I mean, once you think you're getting to the end, it turns out, oh no, this is not the end. And then once again you think you're getting to the end, it's like, oh no, this isn't the end either. It's deceptively long. I don't remember how long. You know, 40 hours might be accurate, but it is pretty darn massive for a Zelda-style action adventure.
Yeah, I'm excited to sink my teeth into it. It seems like...
Yeah, get it, because you're a wolf, so you have your teeth to sink into it.
Yeah, exactly. You're a dork.
You're a jerk.
But, yeah, no, I'm looking forward to playing through it. And, yeah, it just seems like an epic quest that I'm glad to have on my Switch.
All right, very cool. Yeah, it sounds like it's totally living up to what I would expect out of the game, and I'm sure it's only a matter of time before I add it to my library as well.
Yeah, it's a real beast.
I see what you did there. Well, I have not had a chance to play this version of Okami yet, but I have been playing a couple of indie titles on the Nintendo Switch.
Oh, yeah? What have you been playing?
Well, the first one that I've been playing is Iconoclasts.
No.
Are you familiar with this title?
I remember you talking about it, but I can't remember anything about it.
Well, I actually didn't know too much about it myself. It is a Metroid-style 2D action-adventure game, and I know it seems like there's a lot of games like that on Switch recently,
yeah.
But this one is definitely worth your time. The main thing that sets this one apart from the pack is that in addition to your traditional projectile weapons, you know, you have a standard blaster, you have a grenade launcher, I think those are the two that I have so far, you also have this wrench. And you can use that for melee attacks, but it can also be used to swing and grapple and interact with certain little points on the screen.
Mm.
So you're swinging all over the place, you know, a little bit like a Bionic Commando, only it's not a grappling hook, just, you know, grabbing these points directly. Then you're also turning these switches to solve puzzles. And that aspect is really cool. It has some really nifty, innovative puzzles and adds a lot of fun mechanics to the game.
Cool. Yeah, I'm looking at screenshots. It looks like it definitely draws from Mega Man, but yeah, I mean, it looks really fun too.
Well, I wouldn't say there's much Mega Man influence, but you know, certainly it is very bright and colorful and vibrant, and I do really, really like the art style. I mean, Hollow Knight is another great Metroid-style game that came out recently, but from a visual standpoint, it is the direct opposite. And you know, I love the fact that we have, you know, two great games of this type that are, you know, so different in these ways. I mean, you know, Hollow Knight is kind of, you know, dark and spooky, and this is just like this explosion of color, and it feels very, very fun and lively, and sort of gives me this Adventure Island vibe with the visuals.
Yeah, cool, and I really like the idea that there's sort of like this puzzle element to your average platformer.
Yeah, there definitely is. Lots of puzzles to solve. There are also lots of NPCs to interact with. There are towns to visit, and you have plenty of other cool abilities too. There are secondary charge moves on your weapons, like you can change the grenade launcher into a missile launcher. There's a charge burst attack on your regular gun that you can use to give yourself an extra boost while jumping that'll help you access secret areas. You also have this drop-down dive kick that's really fun for mashing enemies with earlier on. And there are also, you know, these secondary characters that you team up with, and apparently they become playable at some point. You know, I'm not very far into the game, but I do believe they, you know, become, you know, playable characters later on. Also, the story is fun, the NPCs you meet up with are very interesting, and yeah, I'm just having a blast with this one so far. It really wasn't on my radar, but a friend, you know, told me I should check it out, and I did, and I'm really digging it so far.
A blast, huh?
Yeah, it is definitely some of the most fun I've had with a Metroid-style game in a long time.
I just thought you were making a pun because of all the shooting.
Not this time, sorry.
Damn.
The other game I've been playing a little bit of is Dead Cells.
Oh, nice. I've heard a lot of good things about this game.
Well, there are definitely some great things about it, and it is fun in a lot of ways. It is a procedurally generated hack-and-slash, you know, action-adventure platformer, and you know, it's really cool to, you know, get sort of a different experience every time with these procedurally generated stages. And there are lots of weapons to collect and loot to find. And there are these, you know, upgradable abilities you get. But, you know, don't be confused that this is also a Metroid-style game, because it's not. I sort of thought it was at first from what I'd heard about it. But the progression is not really Metroid-style at all. You're basically just going from level to level, and yes, they do have these maze-like aspects to them, but your goal is really just to get from one end of the stage to the other, you know, proceed through the stages and defeat the boss. And, you know, maybe one thing you've also heard about it is that it is very difficult and challenging, and that is absolutely true. It will kick your butt all over the place.
And how are you managing with that?
Not very well. I mean, you're supposed to die in this game. You're supposed to die and, you know, keep learning and keep gaining strength and try and try and try again. You know, you collect these orbs as you go through the stage, and then when you finish the stage, you can, you know, apply these orbs to permanent boosts that will enhance your character. However, that can sort of be, you know, a slow process. You know, sometimes these things require, you know, 60 orbs, and you might only gain like 10 or 15 on the early levels, so you know, it can be a little bit slow going at the beginning.
Right.
But your character, you know, has a very diverse moveset. You can get lots of weapons and traps. And really, you know, more than upgrading your character, it's a game about skill. You really have to learn to use the dodge button to avoid attacks. You have to learn to use all these traps and weapons at your disposal. You have swords and bows and whips and shields. And the combat is very fluid and responsive. And fighting all these guys is very satisfying. Up until you get to the point, which is where I kept wiping out, was like on the third area. I was just like swarmed with these enemies, and I could barely even see what was going on. I'd be like, dodge, evade, attack. Oops, I just rolled off a cliff. I'm dead. Damn it. Back to the beginning to try again. So if you're looking for a challenge, you'll definitely find it here.
It's a really pretty game. Like, I really like the animation and everything kind of has like a... It's almost like a 3D meets 2D sort of art style to it.
I see what you mean. Yeah, it does kind of remind me a little bit of games kind of like, you know, Out of This World.
Yeah.
But, you know, brought up way, way, way to modern specifications.
Yeah, like Flashback or something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, personally, I like stuff that looks more like, you know, hand-drawn pixel art, but this definitely does have an appealing visual style.
Cool.
And again, you know, going back to my comparison to Iconoclast, you know, whereas that is, you know, really, you know, sort of happy and fun and vibrant looking, this is very much a dark game. You know, this is a character, you know, your lead in Dead Cells is, yes, you are dead. You don't even have a head. There's like some weird creature that has, you know, infested your corpse of a body. So, yeah, it's kind of a dark game, at least in the areas I've played. Maybe things get all sunshiny later on, but I'm not betting on it.
How does that differ from your real life with that, you know, parasite sort of masquerading inside your brain?
Well, I still have my head, for one thing. That's the main difference, yeah.
Says you.
Anyway, you know, one thing that you do sort of have to know about this game is that you do end up going through the same motion sort of over and over again. Every time you die, it's back to the beginning, and then you have to play through, you know, there are new levels every time, and that's good, but you are kind of doing repetition, like, oh, I wish I didn't have to earn these weapons all over again. I wish I didn't have to, you know, get this cool gear again. But you do.
Right. Now, each time you play, is the level procedurally generated, or is it trying to, like, understand that a little bit better?
Yeah, the levels you play are different every time. If you die, or even if you don't, you will not see that level again. The next time you play, you'll get the same area type with the same themes and a few of the same elements in there, but you will never play the exact same level twice. You never know quite where the enemies will be. You never know quite what items and upgrades you're going to find in there. So it is definitely a cool aspect of it. It does give you a fresh experience every single time. I mean, you know, on the negative side, you could say, oh, it would be more satisfying if I could, you know, keep trying and, you know, perfect my playthrough and get better, but that's not the kind of game this is.
Yeah, I'd have to give it a shot.
Yeah, it's very, very worthwhile. I mean, not for everybody. You know, if you don't like that sense of, oh my gosh, all my progress was just wiped out and I have to, you know, start over from scratch as far as, you know, level progression goes, it might not be the kind of game for you. But yeah, it's definitely good. Just be warned about how that progression works.
Yeah, I think the only thing that's really preventing me from downloading this at the moment is the price tag. And it's not steep, but at $25, it's just not an instant purchase for me.
Yeah, understandable. Understandable.
Maybe I'll look for it on sale and pick it up.
All right, that takes care of our game impressions. Let's move along and talk about some news. So the first thing I wanted to mention in the news is that Diablo III Eternal Collection is on its way to Switch this fall. Pete, are you a fan of Diablo? Are you excited about this news?
I am. I think this is huge. And
well, it's definitely huge.
And mainly just from the standpoint of Blizzard being on a Nintendo platform again.
Yeah, that's for sure. It is really cool to see them coming here, and it could be, you know, the precursor of things to come. But yeah, I mean, this is a game that people have wanted to see on Nintendo systems for a long, long time. Now it is finally happening. And, you know, it's not just regular Diablo 3. It's also the expansion packs. It's Reaper of Souls and Rise of the Necromancer. Not that really means a whole lot to me since I have not ever played this game in any previous form, but I know that it's super popular. I know it is top-down action RPG adventuring and exploration and combating and digging for loot as you fight the lords of hell. I know that you have a huge array of weapons and abilities and 7 character classes, including necromancer, barbarian, witch doctor, monk, and demon hunter. And that all sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, I've definitely always been into Diablo games throughout the series.
Mm-hmm.
I played this one back on PC. I think, man, it must be like 5 years ago now at this point.
Yeah, it's been a while.
But it is exciting that it is on Switch. You know, I can imagine playing it, you know, just being able to like play locally or even online.
Yeah, it has all those features. You can play it solo, you can play it 4-player co-op, and as you were saying, yes, it's both online and local. And you can do it, you know, shared on a single screen, or you can do it across multiple screens. So, yeah, all those options are going to be in there. That's going to make it really, really versatile and flexible for the Switch audience.
It's pretty cool. And did you happen to catch the Reggie announcement video?
You know, I did not.
It was all sorts of low budget. but it was funny.
Well, hopefully he discussed the Nintendo crossover content, because that's possibly, the biggest, most attractive thing about this game, aside from taking the game on the go. We're going to have a Ganondorf mask and armor that you can put on any of your characters, a Kuko pet companion, and a Triforce portrait frame. I don't even know what a Triforce portrait frame means in the context of the game. Does that give you some ability or something? Or does it just look cool? I don't know. But it's pretty darn cool to see some Zelda elements making their way into Diablo.
Yeah, I think everything about this announcement is just really good. And I can only say it makes me wonder why this wasn't revealed at E3.
Yeah, I mean, it was a rumor back then, so it seemed, very possible it could have been. But, I guess they were just saving something for later. I don't know. You're right. They should have totally announced it at E3. It would have been huge.
Yeah, maybe they were just thinking that, last thing we want to announce is a game that's been out forever, a port for it. But I don't know. I think that the relationship between Nintendo and Blizzard is a big one. Hopefully it paves the way to a couple more franchises, like maybe Hearthstone or Overwatch.
Yeah, that would definitely be awesome.
But yes, good news all around on this one.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm going to add this to my permanent library, but I definitely want to check it out. Diablo has always reminded me of Gauntlet, and, maybe that's sacrilegious to some who, are big Diablo fans, like Gauntlet. But I loved Gauntlet back in the day, and, I see this as sort of, the spiritual successor as to where that franchise would be if it were still around. So, that's actually a compliment. And I am looking forward to checking this out, absolutely.
Yeah, you and me both.
All right. Well, speaking of the forces of hell coming to Switch, we also got word that Doom Eternal is on the way to the system.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so obviously this is a sequel to the Doom reboot that hit Switch several months back. And they haven't said a ton about this game so far from the folks at Bethesda. But we know it does have lots of first-person shooting as well as melee combat. Chainsaws and shotguns and flamethrowers and whatnot. And have a grappling hook ability that, pulls you in towards enemies and basically lets you, sort of fly all over the stages, judging from the gameplay reveal they showed at their recent event.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool, very violent. Lots of, shredded enemies and demons to kill and blood splatters everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course, the one they were showing at the event was not running on Switch, but the developers promise that they are not cutting any corners for the Switch version. They say it's going to be running at a solid 30 frames per second and will be out sometime next year.
Yeah, I think my takeaway from this one was that they're trying to launch the Switch version with the other systems, but the Switch version is being handled by Panic Button, which has been known for cranking out some good ports. So
yep.
They seems like they're doing the right way, and it's just kind of cool to see Bethesda continue their love fest with the Switch.
Yeah, definitely. And, I hope this means that, sales are going well for them, and I love continuing to have, this AAA third-party support on Nintendo system. It's great.
Yeah, especially day and date with the rest of the consoles. So.
Yeah, if that actually does stick, that would be some pretty big news.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of violence and bloody death, just a couple more games to touch on.
Man.
It's a theme this week. Dark Souls Remastered finally has a release date. It is coming out on October 19th.
Spooky.
Yeah, and while I don't know how much I'm looking forward to the game itself, of course, that means I finally have a release date for my new Amiibo.
Amiibo!
That's right.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to on that one. And then Walking Dead Season 1 is making its way to Switch. It's coming out like next week on August 28th. And I know that the latest season, the final season, just hit. But yeah, now we're going back to the original one, the one that started all, the one that was like called Game of the Year by many people, Walking Dead Season 1. So that's kind of a big deal too.
Yeah, did you ever play those, Chris?
I did. I did play through the original first season. And I don't know if I played through the second season, but I played through like some interim bonus episode that came between seasons 1 and 2, I think. So I think I played through the first 6 episodes. And yes, it is excellent. It's very good.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking about picking this up. I played the first one, didn't play the second one. And, I wanted to, but I think that there was like a console generation in between the two. And I never quite picked up the second one.
Mm. Yeah, me neither.
Anyways, this seems like a great opportunity to get back into this. I really kind of want to see how it plays out over the course of the entire series. But yeah, I always kind of liked where they were going with it, and it seems like a good one.
Yeah, everything I've played so far is great. Obviously, M-rated, not for everybody. But it's renowned, and glad to see it coming.
Yeah, totally.
And while we are continuing the topic of a grisly horror, Luigi's Mansion for 3DS has a date also.
Oh, wow. Nice segue.
Yeah. It is coming out on October 12th, about a week before Dark Souls Remastered. This is, of course, mostly just a port of the GameCube classic, but is it one you're looking forward to?
Chris, you know dang well that my 3DS is put in a drawer somewhere.
I do, but I thought you were a big Luigi's Mansion fan, no?
You know, I do kind of have a weird soft spot for this series, but probably not going to dust the old 3DS off for this one.
Mm-hmm. I'll probably pick it up. I'm not totally decided, but you know, in addition to the original game, it does have a boss rush mode, and it does have amiibo support, which I don't think they've given out details about yet. But you know, those are definitely a couple good reasons to add to the collection, in addition to Stereoscopic 3D, of course.
Yeah. Does that mean they'll release a vacuuming Luigi amiibo?
Unfortunately, I don't think so. That would be cool, but I think we would have known about it already if that were the case. It'll probably just be relying on previously released Mario series amiibo. That's my guess, anyway.
Tisk, tisk.
We also have a couple other of cool announcements for upcoming games out of Japan. The folks at Gung Ho have announced that Grandia 1 and 2 are both coming to Switch, apparently this winter.
Huh? Wow. I don't know much about that series, though. What can you tell me about it?
Well, it is a renowned RPG series, and you know, I really haven't played it that much myself, but I've always wanted to because it's developed by Game Arts. Game Arts is the same studio that made Lunar, which is one of my all-time favorite RPG series, and so I've always just been wanting an excuse to play through both Grandia and its sequel. You know, the original one came out on PlayStation 1, and it just hit at a time when there were too many RPGs, so somehow it just sort of passed me by. Plus, I played a little bit of it, and the translation wasn't that great, so I'm hoping they give a fresh translation of this version. But still, like I said, it's a classic and one I've been meaning to play for a long time, so having that on Switch makes it even more enticing.
Yeah, I'll definitely keep my eye on that one.
Of course, I don't know if it's confirmed for North America yet, but you gotta believe it will be.
Yeah, you'd think so.
And similarly, over in Japan, they've announced that Langrisser 1 and 2 are also coming to Switch, according to Famitsu Magazine, anyway. And these are classic strategy RPGs, again, confirmed for Japan, not for North America. And this is a series that has really never gotten that much attention in North America. You know, when I worked at Working Designs, we got a lot of requests to bring Langrisser over to the U.S., and you know, I think that a couple of the games finally have made it over, but for the most part, it's been just trapped in Japan, and fans over here that speak English haven't really had a chance to play it. So that, again, would be really great if it gets localized and brought out here in North America.
Yeah, I'd be into it.
Yeah, it's got a cool art style as well. However, what is confirmed for coming out in North America is the next Etrian Odyssey game.
Huh.
It is now owned as Etrian Odyssey Nexus. This is the one that was released in Japan as Etrian Odyssey X. And yeah, it's coming out on 3DS on February 5th of next year, 2019. So, you know, 3DS, it is kind of on its last legs, but, you know, we're still getting this game from Atlus. We're still getting Mario Luigi 3. But yeah, it's great to see this confirmed for North America.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Glad to see the 3DS alive and well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is basically the ultimate Etrian Odyssey game. It will be the last one on 3DS, they promise. But, you know, it's got like 18 returning classes, a new hero class, and characters and locations from all the past Etrian Odyssey games. Apparently, there are over 100 quests to perform. It has an optional auto-mapping feature if you don't want to have to draw your own maps, which is kind of a staple of that series.
Yep.
And also, it has a multiple difficulty settings. So I remember the original being fairly tough. I think they have now included some more casual settings if you don't like that hardcore experience that required so very much grinding.
Now, you've played all of the Etrian Odyssey games, right?
Not all of them, and I've never finished one, but I've certainly dabbled in it quite a bit over the years.
I don't think anyone has ever finished an Etrian Odyssey game.
I don't think that's true. I'm pretty sure I know a couple hardcore players that have conquered them all, but I am not one of them, I'm afraid.
Yeah, they seem brutally long, but what do I know?
But at any rate, still, you know, really cool news to know that is indeed coming here to polish off the series. You know, will they be able to make the jump to Switch someday? You know, without that second screen, which seems so crucial, I kind of have my doubts, but who knows? Maybe they'll figure out a way to make it work.
Yeah, I think when they jump to Switch, it's going to be called Equestrian Odyssey, and it's going to star horses.
Oh, well, that would definitely be terrifying to me. Let's hope not.
You don't like horses?
Oh, no, they scare the crap out of me.
All right, duly noted.
There's just one more bit of news I wanted to touch on, and that is, did you see the announcement that there is this app called InkyPen that's coming out on Switch this November?
No, I didn't.
Well, this is a comics app, you know, for reading comic books on your Switch. It's a subscription-based service that costs $8 a month, and that apparently gives you access to everything that's on the service, which includes a library of 10,000 comic books with notables such as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Transformers, and Sonic the Hedgehog.
Interesting.
Now, there's no Marvel, there's no DC, so, you know, that's kind of a negative thing. But on the other hand, we're finally going to get some sort of app on Switch. It's sort of, you know, long overdue.
Yeah, it's been Hulu and then just nothing.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy that this is happening, you know, before Netflix, before YouTube. But yeah, it's pretty neat. That's going to be an option that's out there for people who are into that sort of thing. And again, you know, hopefully it's just, you know, another step forward to a wider variety of services being on the system.
Yeah, one can hope.
Indeed. That's all I had for news this week, so why don't we move along to some listener mail. This first letter comes from listener Noah Urbanovsky, who writes, "The recent Smash Bros. Direct was amazing, especially for its new fighters. Although I was personally much more excited for K. Rool, it was also a treat to see Simon Belmont join the fight, as he is a perfect fit to represent Nintendo's storied history. I'm sure you guys have seen this online by now, but Simon's inclusion also means that most of the old Captain N cast have been reunited with Mega Man, Pit, and now Simon. With that in mind, would you guys want to see further references to that cartoon along with other old gaming cartoons make it into Smash? And what kind of references would you all prefer?"
You know, the obvious one to me would be Game Boy being a playable character.
Oh my gosh. He'd be like an Echo Fighter of Rob or something?
Hey, that's a good idea.
I do not want to see that. I personally really don't want to see too many other homages to Captain N. I think it's hilarious because it's so bad, but it's not so bad that it's good. It's just so bad it's bad. Like, you know, I would be okay with some alternate color costume homages, like, you know, maybe a green Mega Man or Simon in white tights with a blue tunic, but nothing more than that. Okay, like King Hippo with blue nipples, if King Hippo ends up being in the game somehow. But, you know, nothing more than that. You not want to hear a jive-talking Mother Brain or see Kevin Keen show up blasting things with a zapper. You know, maybe in this day and age, it's possible that someone could make a decent Captain N video game. But, no, I mean, I kind of think that cartoon was sort of an embarrassment, so I would prefer to mostly keep it away from Smash Brothers.
Wow, yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think the idea of having, you know, like a throwback skin would be funny, but other than that, yeah, let's keep Captain N away from Smash.
All right, sounds like we're on the same page with that one. This next one comes from listener Sam, and he writes, "As you discussed in a recent episode, here's something I think needs to come in a redesign for the Switch. How about switching out that resistive touchscreen for a capacitive touchscreen? It's 2018, Nintendo."
Hey, you're just lucky you get any touchscreen at all, mister. Now go to your room.
To respond to this, I have some great news for Sam, and that is that the Switch's screen is actually a capacitive touchscreen. According to their website, it is a 6.2-inch multi-touch capacitive screen. So, believe it or not, Nintendo is actually already on the ball with this one and have indeed given you what you want. So, thumbs up to that.
Wow. Look at that.
Our next message comes from @TravisSalter via Twitter, and he asks, "What was the editorial process of the original Nintendo Power? Did you ever experience other magazines copying your work?" I'm guessing this question is somewhat tied in to you know, the recent plagiarism events that have been sort of a scandal in the games journalism world. But boy, this is kind of a huge question.
Yeah.
Editorial process of Nintendo Power. I mean, I hardly know where to start.
Well, first it was a dartboard.
Yes, that's always how we began. No, but there were, you know, planning sessions and brainstorming meetings, and, you know, everyone had their own sections and our own company contacts. We would harass on a regular basis, and based on the conversations with them and what we knew was coming out, we would, you know, plan out the reviews and previews and features and, you know, before long, it became very intuitive. It was sort of, you know, in a lot of ways, I would like to think of it as a well-oiled machine where we just kind of, you know, put all our stuff together. We were all very familiar with what we were doing. You know, we had sort of a rough editorial calendar of when everything was due, and we'd either write the articles ourselves or get them written by the freelancers, and you know, then they would be passed along to the section editor, and then the copy editor, and then the executive copy editor, and then the managing editor. And then after the pages were all laid out, they'd be printed, and then the printouts would be handed to everyone involved, to the writers and the designers, yep, and the section editors, and we would all check them off. We would literally, you know, have a little, you know, slip of paper stapled to the corner or paperclip to the corner. We have to, you know, check it off and sign off that everyone had seen it. It was okay. So everything had a ton of sign-offs and approvals. And then, you know, Pete, during the future days, I mean, you were probably part of this process too sometimes. You know, everything had to be sent to our contact at Nintendo. Did you ever, you know, have to look over any of our pages or anything?
No, I think maybe one time there was a reference about me that you wrote, and she just wanted me to read it to get my blessing, but I think she probably would have ran it either way. But
anyway, yeah, we had lots of eyeballs looking at every page, lots of approvals, so if any mistakes ever slipped through, you know, it's hard to blame one guy, because there's just so many people who were ever looking at all these pages.
Yeah. Now, I think with the plagiarism thing, I think that that never really happened with the magazine too much, or at least to my knowledge, because...
No, I don't recall anything like that ever happening.
You know, partially just being the format of a magazine and coming out, you know, later than, you know, the internet and all that, it just wasn't a thing that would happen practically, it seemed.
Right, right. Not during our tenure there, anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, for us, the bigger issue was that, you know, some people would get the issue early, or... even worse, you know, someone at the printing press would see some massive scoop and they would start, you know, sort of stealing our content and putting it up on the internet before the magazine even hit and leaking the story online. And so, you know, we actually did have our fair share of good scoops there. And when that happened, people would, you know, want to grab that exclusive and, you know, be like, oh, I'm the source of this news. And so, like, I remember, like literally while the magazine was still on the printing presses, like someone, you know, like took snapshots of our Tatsunoko versus Capcom reveal article and leaked that in a huge way, and so everyone was talking about it, even though we were supposed to have the first exclusive on that. So, you know, things like that would happen, but as far as copying or plagiarizing goes, not that I'm aware of.
Yep, crime doesn't pay.
This last note comes from listener Blake, who has an addendum to his Power Pros milk drinking game. Just two additions. One of those is Urban Champion, and now the phrase, how dare you, can be attributed to either Pete or the Hoff.
Do we really talk about Urban Champion that much?
I don't know. I feel like we need to have a full list of the rules for the milk drinking game. I'm not quite sure exactly how this thing works. I think we're going to need to get further explanation on how this game is played by Blake.
Yeah, I would like some details worked out. I want to play myself.
All right, that takes care of letters for this week.
You know, Chris, I think it's time to introduce a new segment to the show.
A new segment, you say?
Yeah, and it's called Hassle the Hoff.
Oh, my.
You ready to play?
All right, sure, I guess I am. Let's do this thing.
All right.
How does it work?
So basically, I'm going to ask you a question, and it can be anything. It's kind of a, you know, a bit of a wild card.
Okay, just one question.
Just one question. There's not really a real wrong or right answer to it, but it's just kind of your take on the Nintendo universe.
Okay, all right then. Bring it. Hassle away.
All right. If you had to wrestle and win against anyone in the Nintendo universe, who would it be? This is like a real-life wrestling tournament.
If I had to wrestle and I had to win by, like, you know, pinning their shoulders to the mat or making them submit? Okay, I've got an answer for you, Pete. This is all too easy, actually. I would go with Baby Luigi.
Wow, that's just kind of creepy.
I mean, you know, I don't have the greatest real-life in-ring skills, but I think I could take Baby Luigi without even using a steel chair. So that's what I'm going
to do. I like that you didn't even go with Baby Luigi. Baby Mario. Like, Baby Mario is maybe too much of a fight. Baby Luigi.
Possibly.
Baby Luigi is where it's at.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely thought that Baby Bowser would probably be too tough. Baby Peach would be too creepy. Yeah, so I'm picking Baby Luigi. I think I could do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good call. Nicely done.
All right, thank you kindly.
And that was Hassel the Huff.
Inaugural edition.
By the way, if anyone has any questions for Hassel the Huff that you'd like me to consider, send them my way at Burly Red Yeti on Twitter.
Or just use the Power Pros email address. Okay, with that said, I do believe it is time for us to take an intermission, so let us do that, and then when we come back, we'll discuss this week's big topic, which is video game vacations. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is video vacations, game worlds that we would want to visit if we could magically transport ourselves to any game setting and go there for a vacation.
I like the theme. You know, it's that time of year.
It's kind of that time of year. You know, it's sort of the end of summer. You know, vacation is sort of over. You know, summer is kind of coming to a close. It's time to, you know, go back to school and start getting ready for autumn. But, you know, you're right. It's still a little bit of that opportunity. You know, maybe the best thing we can do for a vacation at this point is to transport ourselves to some of our favorite video games. You know, not literally speaking, that is.
You mean you don't really want to go to these places?
I mean, I don't literally think I'm going to be going to these places.
All right, that's fair.
But if we could, these are the locations that we would transport ourselves to. So let's begin.
All right. Since this is your idea, how about you go first?
Okay. All right. Well, the first location I would want to visit would be the world of Xenoblade Chronicles 2, the world of Allrest.
Wow. That sounds like you could get randomly encountered at any point.
There are no random encounters in Xenoblade Chronicles 2, my friend.
No.
My nemi, I mean.
Your frenemy?
What you know, I like about Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is how big and sprawling and amazing it is to explore. And in real life, I actually enjoy going hiking. And so, you know, I think that I would, you know, love exploring these continents set on Titans, you know, these huge, massive continent-sized beasts. And, you know, I imagined, you know, there are some things that would be precarious, like the fact that there is strife and war going on, and there is the occasional chance you might run into like a level 99 T-Rex that, you know, one hit kill eats you or something.
Wow.
But, you know, in the end, the game ends okay. And, you know, after you level up, you can take out these monsters pretty easily. And in fact, I think there's actually a setting now in the game that most of the monsters will actually avoid you. So that could be good, too. Hmm. But, yeah, I just, you know, love the environments and views and all these breathtaking places you can go in that game. And so I think that would be, I don't know if it's my first choice, but definitely one of my top choices for a video game world I'd like to visit.
Hmm. All right. That's fair. I think along those same lines, I was thinking, you know, I would really like to explore Breath of the Wild.
Ah, okay. That was certainly on my short list as well. But I didn't pick that for various reasons I'll get into later. But why did you choose that one, Pete?
Well, again, because it's kind of, you know, it's sprawling and you can kind of go to all these different climates within the same map.
Mm-hmm.
And if I get bored, I can get on a raft and go out to Eventide Island and try that
out. Use all your clothes.
Well, yeah, you know.
You can also jump on a shield, go snowboarding.
Exactly. Plus, you know, horses are everywhere. If I just whistle,
one terrifying, terrifying horses.
Come on, that's like the best mode of transportation, really.
I'll take the motorcycle myself.
You tell me you're terrified of Epona?
In real life, I would be, yes.
All right, we'll just step away from that one.
They got big teeth, man.
You know, and then occasionally you'd find the odd Korok seed and get to watch the guy do his little maraca dance. And
yeah, that's true.
that's where I'd go.
Now, would you dress up like a lady in order to visit the Gerudo town?
No comment.
Okay. Yeah, the reason I did not pick Breath of the Wild is, you know, there's two reasons, really. One, those guardians. Those guardians, you know, they sort of scare the crap out of me. And I would inevitably run into one of them and it would just, you know, kill me in one hit. And that would be no fun at all. It's hard to enjoy the world when you're dead from a scary-ass guardian.
It's true.
And second, those blood moons are even scarier. I am not in the mood to see those blood moons in real life. At least not ones where, you know, like the world seems to be transporting you into hell. You know, a real blood moon I can handle, but the Breath of the Wild blood moons, just a little too creepy for me. So, yeah, I will try my luck with dodging the Xenoblade Chronicles 2, you know, giant tyrannosaurs rather than the guardians.
Yeah. I'm just trying to find a great fairy with the torso the size of a house.
Ah, yes. If you bring them the right goods, you can get very intimately acquainted with those fairies. Yes, that's very true. I can see why you'd enjoy that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'll probably stay away from the shrines, though.
Well, if you were going to visit and hang out in one of the villages, which one would you pick, do you think?
You know, honestly, I was thinking maybe Terrytown.
Ah, oh yeah. Yeah, after that gets built up, that is a very nice, relaxing place to be. Mm-hmm. That's
yep.
true.
And it's far away from any guardians who want to zap you.
There are some just across the ravine, but yes, it's fairly safe, all things considered. This is true. This is very true. Yeah, just watch out for the giant, shadowy, spectral Ganon beast from the castle nearby. Just be careful about that.
Yeah, I'd like to visit it post-Link coming through there.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Well, moving on then, I think my next choice would be, you know, probably another fairly obvious Switch title, and that would be Super Mario Odyssey.
Hmm. That's also on my list.
Well, I mean, with good reason, I would say. You know, it's a very, very diverse world. You know, there's lots of different options, different places to visit. You know, you can have your big city living with New Donk City, but you can also go and hang out with dinosaurs.
It's true. I don't know if that's a plus or not. But
I don't know why I keep bringing up dinosaurs. I got them here in Xenoblade. I got them here in Mario Odyssey. I guess it's a little obsession of mine. I'm not sure why.
It's like the opposite of horses.
Yes. I'd rather try my luck with the dinosaur. So what locales in Super Mario Odyssey would you visit? Where would be your top places to go?
I think my top place to visit would be the Sand Kingdom.
Ah, interesting. That's sort of a little bit of Egypt combined with a little bit of Mexico.
Yeah, it seems like it would just be a chill place to kind of, you know, kick back.
Chill, get it? Because it freezes. They froze the world at first.
You love doing that. Yeah, it would just be a nice place, you know, put on a poncho, sombrero, maybe a margarita, just kick back.
Yep, I can see that. For me personally, though, I think it would be all about going to New Donk City. I mean, who wouldn't want to be in a place that has, like, these big musical Donkey Kong celebrations going on in town? I mean, you know, if there were a place in real life where I could go do that, I totally would.
It's true. Plus, just imagine going into, like, a library there. What would the books even say?
Well, certainly a history of all the gorilla-related activities in the town.
Right. I'd have a lot of questions for Pauline.
Ah, yes. Understandably so.
Like, would you be my one-up girl?
Oh, my. I don't know. I kind of think she's already taken. I think you're just preparing to turn yourself into gorilla fodder, my friend.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And again, it's a risk you might have to take. Of course, I'd also have to be sure to check out that gigantic, crazy-looking dragon. I wouldn't want to get too close, but I love the giant dragon. I'd have to check that out. And then I'd have to go to the food kingdom. I forget what it's called exactly, but I'd have to go there and go on some sort of all-you-can-eat buffet and stuff myself senseless. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I would go to the food kingdom.
Understandable. Well, the next one I've got on my list would be to visit the world of Animal Crossing.
Yeah, you and me both.
Uh-huh. So why did you choose that one then?
Well, first off, because Cap'n and I would get along marvelously.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I would let him take me out to the island. We'd hang out.
Would he stroke your beard?
Nope, but he would definitely incorporate it into a dirty limerick of some kind.
Or a shanty, perhaps?
Yes, a shanty is more appropriate. And then, you know, obviously go, you know, pick some fruit, catch some fish, catch some bugs, you know, kick back, relax.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I picked it, too. It's just where you want to go for some nice peace and quiet. And also, you know, I've been playing Animal Crossing Pocket Camp a surprising amount since that game came out. And I am rich. I am just loaded up with bells. I would go so far as to call myself a bellionaire.
Wow.
So despite the fact that, you know, Tom Nook is usually stealing everybody's money left and right, I am very wealthy in the world of Animal Crossing at the moment. So I would like to visit and get totally rich just by giving random people fish and bugs.
On a side note, what would you give that game if you had to score it?
Oh, man, that would be really hard. I mean, objectively speaking, it's not that good, but it has this weird addictive quality where, you know, it's, you know, fun to play in short bursts just for a little bit of relaxation. I mean, if I were giving it, you know, like a 10-point scale, I couldn't really give it any higher than a 6. I couldn't justify it, but for some reason, I keep playing it anyway.
You know, I want to go back to it and play it, but that's another time.
Yeah. I mean, I'd much rather be playing a new version on Switch. But again, that is also something we have to be waiting another time for. As a bit of an aside, though, you know, I'm kind of wondering, you know, what kind of world Animal Crossing really is. Like, are these really animals you're talking to, or are they just like crazy people dressed up like animals? Like, you know, one of the characters is clearly like a stuffed animal that's sewn together, which in real life, that would be super creepy. And then, like, another character has, like, you know, an inflatable, you know, like, blowhole on his head. So it really makes me wonder. You know, it might just be some sort of weird, crazy asylum this whole thing has taken place in. But I think I digress.
It's true. But then they're also kind of stalkerish because, like, if you don't talk to them for a long time, they kind of get a little snippy with you. So you just would feel like you need to go make the rounds every day.
It's true. It's true. Maybe we're better off if we don't think about this too deeply.
Agreed.
Okay, well, the next world I would want to go visit would be the world of Mega Man.
Ah, all right, that's pretty cool. Anywhere in particular?
Not really. I mean, you know, I've seen, you know, the worlds of Mega Man shown in many different forms, and you know, it really wouldn't be the places that you go to in the game. I mean, every place that's in the game tend to be, you know, these installations that are overrun with, you know, crazy out-of-control robots. I'm not really in for the out-of-control robots. I'm just in for this whole, you know, futuristic living alongside the peaceful robots. You know, for the most part, that's what the world of Mega Man is. It's these technologically complex metropolises. They got robots everywhere. They are mostly clean and mostly peaceful. And it's only on special occasions when, you know, Dr. Wily makes them all go crazy and start running amok and destroying everything. But I know that when that happens, Mega Man will be there to save the day.
Now, would you try to stroke Dr. Light's beard?
Possibly, possibly. Yeah, if he lets me. Sure, why not?
I didn't think you'd ask permission.
But, you know, for the most part, you know, the world of Mega Man, the original Mega Man, is a very optimistic look at the future, you know, where, you know, we don't have, you know, tons of problems or pollution, and robots and technology actually are our friends. So it seems like it would be a very nice future to go to.
That's true, for the most part.
As opposed to, you know, Mega Man X, where by the time that rolls around, the entire world's like an apocalyptic death trap. So not Mega Man X, just specifically the original Mega Man. I guess Mega Man Battle Network would be okay, too. That things seem all right in that world. It's, you know, a little dull, comparatively speaking, but at least it's not like, oh, a space station and the moon are going to come crashing down and kill you like they do in the X games or anything. So I'll stay away from there. So what else do you have?
Well, Chris, I'd like to go visit Nintendo Land.
Oh, Nintendo Land. Okay, well, that's a good place to visit.
Yeah, it just seems like the closest to an actual Nintendo theme park, even though those are in the pipeline for the future.
Yes, yes, indeed.
I would like to, you know, be able to kind of hang out in an amusement park based around all of Nintendo's intellectual properties.
Yeah, sure. That'd be loads of fun.
I'd probably do the Metroid ride.
Hmm.
And the F-Zero ride.
Oh, yes, I could see that.
And the Mario ride. How about you? Any other rides in particular?
You know, Nintendo Land was never one of my favorites. But, you know, I sort of You know, and I did enjoy the F-Zero stuff, and I did enjoy the Metroid stuff as well. And especially if you were there, and, you know, I could shoot you in Metroid, that would be loads of fun too.
Wow. Why does it always got to get violent?
That's just the way it is between nemesis.
Indeed. So I was actually thinking the land of Dragon Quest Builders was kind of fun.
Ah, okay. That's an interesting pick.
Yeah, I mean, it would definitely require a lot of work. It's, you know, I'm going to basically create everything yourself.
That's true.
But, you know, you get to listen to the sweet Dragon Quest theme song. And, you know, when you level up, you hear the cool sound effect. Yeah, it just seems like a fun place to go explore, which you can actually do in the game. But in real life, you know, it seems like it'd be nice to be able to build a little cottage and hang out and meet the random passersby that think the end is nigh.
Yeah, I admit it is a lot harder to just quickly build up a, you know, village or building from scratch than it is in the game.
Yeah, I could imagine struggling, but... You know, I think that that would actually be a pretty fun place to visit.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Not a bad pick at all.
How about you? What do you got?
Well, I've only got one more pick, and my last pick would be Diamond City from WarioWare.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I was thinking about this recently. You know, presumably Diamond City is somewhere set on the same planet in the same universe as everything else that's in Super Mario Odyssey, since we know that... You know, Mario and Wario take place in the same, you know, continuity and universe. So on the one hand, it is kind of crazy that a place like this, you know, coexists alongside the Mushroom Kingdom. But on the other hand, it's not really any crazier than the other, you know, jungle kingdoms and prehistoric-style kingdoms and other things we've seen in Mario Odyssey. So we know that, you know, this is a very, very diverse world. And I guess the reason that I am singling out Diamond City in particular is, yes, it's another metropolis, very similar in some ways, I guess, to New Donk City. But apparently, it's even more wild and crazy, and it's full of, like, talking animal taxi drivers and witches and these, you know, crazy cyborg doctors with their grandchildren. And most importantly, everybody loves video games, and apparently everybody can easily make video games. You know, even like these random disco dudes with huge blue afros can make games, and these preschooler ninjas can make video games, and random high school delivery girls can make video games. So everybody can code in Diamond City, and that's pretty awesome. And, you know, as you are aware, I was already a big name game designer thanks to WarioWare DIY.
That's right.
So I would fit right in, but it also seems like a good place to visit and have fun and, you know, maybe improve my programming skills quite a bit. You know, hang out with 9-Volt and play some NES games, stuff like that. Seems like it would be fun.
Yeah, Diamond City is a wild card. I'm impressed, Chris. I would never have thought of that.
Well, I've been playing a lot of WarioWare Gold recently, so it's certainly on the top of my mind.
Yeah, I can imagine that being a pretty zany world where garlic is aplenty.
Yes, that too. Definitely that too. So, what else is on your list? Anything else?
Yeah, I think if I had to go one more, I'd go with the Donkey Kong Country world.
Oh, okay. Lots of bananas, huh?
Yeah, I think honestly it's tropical. I get to hang out with Funky Kong and go surfing, go to Kong Island. You know, what's not to like? You get to eat bananas, hang out in a hammock.
Well, I mean, you got to be careful about those bananas. I hear there are some apes around there who are not very happy if anybody else tries taking the bananas. So that's a pretty hefty risk you're going to be running there.
I'm hairy enough. They might confuse me for an orangutan or something.
No, that's very true. That's very true. I mean, you know, comparing your beard to Cranky Kong's beard, yeah, they'd probably welcome you in right away, actually, now that you mention it. So good call. Good call.
They might even slap a new Kong moniker on me.
Hmm. What would that be, do you think?
Beardy Kong?
Ah, yes. It sounds appropriate to me. Beardy Kong. I like it.
Please don't ever call me that.
I'll keep that in mind. Anything else to mention, or is it time to wrap up this week's big topic?
I think I'm good.
Okay. All right. Then wrap it up we shall.
With all this talk of vacation, I'm ready to go on one.
Yeah, start booking your flights right away. Or just turn on your Nintendo Switch to be transported to any of these wonderful locales. And with that said, I guess it is time to bring this week's episode to a close.
I think you're forgetting something, Chris.
Oh, yeah, how silly of me. We do have time for one more thing. And of course, that would be a dramatic reading. This time, It comes from the Nintendo Switch eShop. It is the description of My Farm 2018. Amazing breeding simulation game. You start with just a hen, an empty field, and a few pennies. You have to feed your hen, take care of it, and improve its living conditions. If you give it plenty of seed to eat, your hen will lay eggs that you can sell to the shopkeeper. In exchange, you can buy more animals at the farmer's fair. But be careful. If your hens are not fed regularly, they will run off to find food somewhere else, and they will continue to leave even if your game is not running. All your animals have to be fed, but they also need to be clean and healthy. And you will also have to clean the complete farm and plant crops to get some more food. The aim of the game is to earn money by selling eggs and other farm produce in order to buy more animals at the farmer's fair and items that improve your farm from the shopkeeper. Little by little, as your farm develops, you will unlock bonuses items such as a wind turbine, a rooster, a dog, a tractor, etc. And you will be able to customize all our animals.
Wow, there are
10 kinds of cartoon animals: hens, ducks, turkeys, rabbits, pigs, goats, sheep, cows, donkeys, and horses. During days and nights, take care of your animals, food, cleanliness, disease, etc. Sell your farm products to win more money. Goals and events lead in a real adventure. Many farm improvements to unlock, as incredible bonuses to collect.
Wow. Yeah, there's some janglish going on there.
I don't think so. I don't know where this game was developed, but I don't think it was made in Japan.
Well, it is not very clear English. How about that?
No, it doesn't seem to be. And I've never played this version on Switch, the 2018 version. I don't think I've played the original either, but it was originally, as I recall, a DSiWare game that came out like 8 years ago.
Wow.
And I have to say, it did, in the pages of Nintendo Power, in the download section, earned itself a rating of Grumble Grumble.
My favorite is when the things are listed out and then there's an et cetera, and they do it twice.
I know. I don't know why that gets me every time, but just it seems like, oh, we really just couldn't think of anything to say about this.
It's such a better way to say, like, and more.
I know.
But et cetera is just like, so, like, really? That's the best you got?
Yep. It's like, whatever.
And
who cares?
Et cetera.
Yep. You said it.
I do like taking care of my animals for food, cleanliness, and disease.
But what's that about how they'll run off even if you're not playing the game? I mean, if there was ever an incentive for me to not even begin this thing, it's like, oh, you're just going to run off while you're not playing? Forget that.
Yeah, that is kind of creepy, and it ends with like an ellipsis, so it makes it even creepier.
Yeah, that game can just go to heck as far as I'm concerned if my animals run off. Jeez.
If I bought that game for you, would you play it?
Maybe. I mean, I was looking at some of the images of the game, and this goat with these crazy, scary-looking bug eyes was kind of freaking me out. If I can get past that, maybe I'll give it a try.
I also noticed there's a horse theme in this episode. We've got a lot, a lot of horse talk.
Yeah. Yeah, I should have saved that for Halloween because it's so terrifying. But, oh, well. Too late to do anything about it now.
All right. Well, if you happen to pick this one up, let me know.
Anyway, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at powerprospod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Pete at Burly Red Yeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and of course, if you like the podcast, it would be great if you told your friends about us. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Michaud, a.k.a. Beardy Kong.
Thanks for horsing around.
And our good friend, Octopath Travelers Tressa.
Thank you!
We will see you next time.